doing what they are doing. And heads. Although heads are not so often. Thankfully, people are usually pretty careful with their heads. Seth followed Pewter up the uneven stairs, watching him duck where the ceiling got really low. Might I suggest you concentrate less on magic and more on getting yourselves out of this spot of trouble? Pretty good at that, aren't you, Mr. Seppi? Getting yourself into trouble. Spot of trouble? Seth laughed hollowly. There's so much evidence against me, everyone thinks I did it. Nothing's going to make any difference. Can you... Do you know if Nightshade is all right? That cat? Wasn't too keen on Miss Bunn getting hold of that black book of yours. What has Tiffany done to her? Managed to shut her in a box, but not without a little damage to the fair skin of Miss Bunn. Nightshade was fine, once I found her and let her out. A little grumpy. Yes, she's often like that. Thank you. They arrived at one of the bedrooms that had stood empty. Pewter slipped inside without switching on the light, and Seth followed him. Not for the first time. Seth had a sense that Pewter was in pursuit of some odd trail of his own. Now, let's see if we can't finally solve this mystery between us. We are close. Seth knew he had to find a way to convince Pewter of the extraordinary confession Angelique had just made to him, but he didn't know where to begin. If he imagined himself saying the words, he only imagined Pewter laughing. She really had played a clever game. It was taking a few moments for Seth's eyes to adjust, and he realized the room wasn't quite empty. There was something moving in a dark corner. A grey mist was hovering. Seth tensed and went to grab at Pewter's arm. Could this be the same grey shape Gloria Troutbeam had seen? Was this the ghost of Dr. Thelomius? But Pewter wasn't concerned in the slightest and strode towards the small, shimmering, shivering ball of dull grey light suspended above the desk. Pewter peered curiously into its depths, and Seth's fears quickly gave way to curiosity. "I just need to tidy up some loose ends that will help my case." "Your case against me?" Seth waited and hoped. It was impossible to ever know what Pewter was thinking, but somehow, from the start, when no one else seemed to believe Seth's innocence, Pewter had seemed to see further and deeper and to be seeking something else. Pewter turned from the glowing globe to look at Seth with his blue eyes, bright even in the gloom.
"You think I've asked for your help building your own case against you? You have to learn who you can trust, Seth," he said gently. "Some of us are only after the truth. Now promise not to tell on me."
Seth felt a small stirring of hope inside him that all was not quite lost. If... Even after the mountain of evidence against him, Pewter still thought there might be another answer. Seth still had a chance. As Seth's eyes adjusted to the gloom, he became mesmerized by the swirling mist. At its center was a tiny pinprick of grey light, surrounded by a swirling sphere that grew both in size and intensity as he watched. Before he could even ask Pewter about it, it had reached the size of a small football. "What do you mean by tell on you, sir?" "Kingfisher sealed off all communications quite rightly. This method is very discreet, or would be, only you've got a truly rotten signal out here. I guess it might be all the trees, so I've had to leave it brewing up a stronger connection. And it would make my life much simpler if Kingfisher didn't know about it, because parts of what I'm about to do may be ever so slightly illegal." Seth's heart beat faster at the mention of doing something ever so slightly illegal with Pewter. He watched the inspector swipe a hand across the mist, and Seth was spellbound at the way it started to move in a new direction. It gathered and then started to spin.
"Not ready yet."
Pewter wiggled his fingers in among the glow. The mist arranged itself into pink dots. Pewter opened his jacket, revealing again the array of tiny bottles attached to the lining. He removed one, unstoppered it with his long fingers, took out a pinch of cinnamon-colored powder, and wafted it above the mist. Seth knew he should be focusing on finding a way to properly put the blame where it belonged, on Angelique. She had been feeding him information about the magical world, and now he was starting to doubt it all. She had told him she was finding magic she didn't understand, about there being magic at the hotel, zapping everything with blue light, and that trick she'd pulled where the walls rumbled. She was the one who made the walls say, "Witchracht." She should just come out with it. Tell Pewter everything. He just needed a way to tell him about the divinoscope and the zapping, without it sounding like the most ridiculous story. But the globe began to glow a greenish color, and all Seth could think was that he was watching Pewter doing magic.
"They upgraded it recently," grumbled Pewter. "Never been as good as the old version. Don't know why they have to mess with these things. I'm trying a little unpowder, kind of a magical kickstart. If your magic isn't pulling its weight as it should, well, we call this a teleglobe, which I stick to because it's properly named after the sorcerer who devised it, and her name is quite unpronounceable. It just sounds like you're sneezing, but you can't get away from it being the greatest magical device for finding out things quickly."
"You mean, will it tell us who killed Dr. Thelomius?" asked Seth, eager and hopeful. This might be a brilliant way forward in getting Pewter to suspect Angelique.
"Magical, it might be, but it's also pretty dumb. It'll only repeat what someone's already programmed into it. Now, on a hugely expensive channel like this..." Pewter's hands moved, and images began to come clearer.
"Why don't you try it first, Seth? Got a question? Go on, give it a whirl."
All Seth wanted was to get to the bottom of why Angelique might have killed Dr. Thelomius, because if he knew that, he could tell Pewter everything, and it would sound all right, and he had a chance of being believed.
"Well," said Pewter, after Seth paused, "I have plenty of questions. You have been learning about the magical world, Seth, about the unpleasant and all the sorcerers missing feared exploded. I do wonder if we might be thinking along the same lines."
Seth was surprised. He thought Pewter said he was building a case against someone. He thought Pewter was going to ask for background on whoever he suspected.
"The sorcerers wanted in connection with the unpleasant. Is that something your department Magicon investigates?" he asked carefully.
"Not us, no. We at Magicon deal with your basic, everyday crime, wrongdoing, and all manner of shady goings-on in the magical community. But tracking down wanted sorcerers from the unpleasant and declaring those sorcerers as officially alive or dead is the responsibility of a crack team."
"MFE sorcerers like Wintergreen Troutbean," said Seth slowly. "Sounds like he had a good reason to hate Dr. Thelomius. I guess people only think he's dead. No one knows for sure. I guess that has to be investigated."
"That's it exactly. Full name of the department is the Sinister Speculation Services, although it's usually referred to as S3. But that is what they do. Most of it is undercover. Well, the last thing they'd want to do is alert a sorcerer that they are being investigated. That sorcerer may be very skillful in hiding, to avoid having to answer too many awkward questions about their role in the unpleasant. In fact, the S3 could stand for Seriously Sassy Sorcerers.
Want to know more about the Elysee's team of secret agents?
Seth peered over Pewter's shoulder, where words were beginning to emerge out of the mist. As the words appeared, the teleglobe began to talk in a low female voice.
The work of the S3 begins by targeting homes or buildings connected to MFE sorcerers. They investigate use of magic. If they find no signs of recent magical activity, they conclude that the sorcerer is dead, rather than missing, and their official status is changed. Then they sweep out all the magic from the dark corners of their homes, remove magical texts, any magical artifacts, sometimes whole libraries. And once all traces of magic have been removed, then the house is said to be cleaned and can be declared safe for reuse.
Tricky work. Guess it must backfire occasionally, Pewter said thoughtfully. If the sorcerer has just been taking a long vacation.
Seth was taking all this in, but Pewter was already swiping again across the surface, and the swirling mist inside the shimmering globe turned a deep shade of pink.
Now this is the bit which is highly illegal, and takes a little skill. Although really very simple for an absolute genius like myself, you may turn away if you wish. Slicing.
Slicing? It's the term used for slipping unseen to dig around where you have no business to be in the first place. In this case, the Elysee vaults.
They aren't that keen to let just anyone in.
Why?
I guess they think their vaults are private.
No, I mean...
Ah, I also have some tricky questions that I can't answer. There are things I'm being kept in the dark about. I'm having no end of difficulty working out which lies I need to be bothered about, he muttered as the mist moved and gathered, and I would really like to find out exactly what she is up to.
Seth hit upon that word, she, and a spark of hope lit inside him that it might not sound quite so ridiculous if he told Pewter about Angelique's confession. As the name of the person Pewter was investigating emerged through the mist, Seth breathed it aloud.
Angelique!
Chapter 39 Living from the Start.
So Pewter was already suspicious of Angelique.
Could it be that Pewter, like Seth, had worked his way to the same conclusion, that she was the only one here with enough magic to get through those charmed doors? Perhaps there was a chance Seth was going to be able to clear his name. Pewter leant forward.
She doesn't even work for Thelonious.
Well, she's been lying about a lot of things, Seth mumbled, still feeling such a complete fool for being so utterly taken in by all her ridiculous stories about magic being here.
Yeah, she does that, doesn't she?
Said Pewter. Seth wanted to tell Pewter everything. Not just about how Angelique had confessed she was responsible for Dr. Thelomius's death, but all that fizzing about her with her red cane, flashing blue light, all the nonsense about ripples and unexplained magic. He'd been so stupid, but he still hadn't a clue what she had done it all for or what it all meant.
I can only think of a couple of reasons she would want to conceal the real facts from me, and I don't want to have to dangle her upside down for the truth, said Pewter. The squares are quite a distinguished line of sorcerers. So what is she up to? You think she's our murderer, don't you, Seth? Said Pewter quietly.
Seth replied slowly, I can do better than that. I know she is.
What's she been telling you?
Just now, she confessed to me that the fact that Dr. Thelonious is dead is down to her. Seth held his breath. There. The news was out. How would Pewter react? Pewter turned, and Seth again caught the intense blue of his eyes behind his glasses.
Did she indeed? Believe that, did you? She's never been anything other than completely straight with you.
"Absolutely not," Seth blustered. "She's been lying to me and misleading me right from the start."
"Yes, she plays her own game pretty close, doesn't she?"
Was that all Pewter was going to do or say? Seth wasn't sure if Pewter didn't believe him, or whether it was completely the opposite, and it wasn't news to him at all. He just seemed his usual calm self, and had not reacted the way Seth had expected to the shocking news of Angelique's confession. But then, when did Pewter ever react the way anyone expected? But something else sank in that Pewter had just said.
"So she comes from one of the old magical families."
"One of the oldest, the Squares," nodded Pewter.
Hadn't she been explaining to him right from the start how powerful magical families had been plotting to get rid of Dr. Thelomius and his reforming ideas?
Seth almost missed the sound of light footsteps approaching. Then Pewter's head turned as someone called his name.
"Never a moment's peace. No wonder this case is taking so long to crack. But it is finally building nicely."
He slid into the corridor, pulling the door discreetly behind him. What did he mean? Was the case not closed?
"Madam, how may I be of assistance?" he heard Pewter say, and the unmistakably high voice of Gloria Troutbean replying as she announced,
"I am ready for the seance, but I want to know,"
she sounded a little nervous,
"what questions I should ask."
Something brushed Seth's legs. He hadn't even noticed her slip in.
"Nightshade, where have you been?"
He went to hug her, wanting nothing more than to bury his face in her soft fur. But Nightshade gave an enormous stretch and a big yawn, unfurling her claws.
"Think I might have dropped off just a little." She yawned widely again. "Nap."
"You've been sleeping? I thought you were..."
"I can't help it if I need my sleep," said Nightshade, starting to lick a paw. "Cats need at least 17 hours sleep a day. I'm only doing what is natural."
"I thought something awful had happened to you. I thought Tiffany..."
"I give her something to think about."
Nightshade turned her back, as if she didn't want to talk about it, and hissed at the globe of mist. It was wriggling around, almost as if it was beckoning to Seth. "Come on, give me a try."
"Did I miss anything?"
"That, Nightshade, is a magical device called a teleglobe. You can ask it stuff. You only missed Tiffany giving the black book to King Fisher as evidence against me. I got locked up again. But now I don't think it's Mr. Bunn who is the one really responsible for all of this. I think Pewter and I might be thinking along the same lines that..."
"Don't know, Seth. There's a lot of strange things about..."
"I'm beginning to think that Angelique might be right. There could be something dark lurking here at the hotel."
"Huh?" "Well, I am learning not to trust a word that girl says.
Listen, she told me just now. I asked her right out and she admitted it. She's the one responsible for Dr. Thelomius's death. But I was the only one who heard her confess. Although I think Pewter is doing the same as me, trying to get some evidence against her."
Nightshade was looking at him as he moved closer to the teleglobe, her green eyes gleaming.
"And this is going to get us the evidence?
Got to be worth a try. It's a magical device," shrugged Seth. "Don't suppose it would work for me."
But he lifted his eyes to watch it, and moved closer, transfixed by the swirling haze, which then reached out long, thin, misty tendrils, grey swirling around him, drawing him to it, pulling him in invitingly. Seth sensed if Nightshade had any eyebrows, she would be raising them now. He had watched Pewter carefully. There was a low conversation taking place outside the door. He stood before it nervously. Could he possibly get a magical device to work?
If Seth was going to try to use the teleglobe, it had to be now. He had so many questions. So many questions it was difficult to focus on just one. He had got too confused with which lies he had been told. He rubbed his neck, thinking of Angelique getting angry with him, her buzzing everything with the fierce blue light of her divinoscope, telling him she was detecting magic she'd never seen before. Seth thought of the walls rumbling. One chance. Something he really wanted an answer to. Something that might just help him to understand exactly what Angelique's game was. He had to ask it quickly, before Pewter came back. He bent towards the swirling teleglobe and clearly and confidently asked his question. Why do the walls at the Last Chance Hotel talk? Chapter 40. What is Witchracht? The mist just sat there, gently curling. Had he said it too quietly, or just done it wrong? He frowned, glanced anxiously at the door, and remembered what Inspector Pewter had done. He took the container that Pewter had left on the table, the one containing unpowder. Seth unstoppered it. Between the tips of his fingers, he took the tiniest pinch and sprinkled it across the fog exactly as Pewter had done. Words appeared out of the mist.
Last Chance Hotel. Formerly Last Chance House. Ancestral home of Witchracht. The ancient name of the famed scientific sorcerer best known for inventing the Runeglass.
Nightshade, get this. Witchracht is a person.
What are you talking about? Grumbled Nightshade.
That writing that gleamed out of the black book. And when the wall said, Witchracht, it isn't a thing. The walls were saying a name. The name of a scientific sorcerer, like Dr. Thelonious was. Witchracht used to live here, at the Last Chance Hotel.
Seth peered again at the words, and noticed that the word Runeglass was highlighted. As though, if you wanted to, you could ask it to tell you more. What's more, he recognized the word and knew exactly where he'd seen it before.
The word Runeglass was mentioned in the Black Book, along with the Firefly Cage.
He thought for a moment about the words Witchracht, appearing as a bright light shining out of his black book.
But what does it mean, Nightshade? I still haven't a clue.
His shoulders sagged. The answer to his question seemed only to have given him more questions. Seth read on, scanning quickly all the details he could.
Wanted for questioning about involvement in the unpleasant, if alive. Official status, missing. Feared exploded.
Nightshade. Witchracht is one of the sorcerers missing feared exploded. He was involved in the unpleasant and is wanted for questioning. And he used to live here.
A wanted sorcerer used to live here? You're having me on.
The creak of a floorboard told Seth now was not the time to try to puzzle it out. Pewter was coming back, and before Seth knew it, was in the room.
I have bad news for you.
Seth waited, wondering if he'd been found out dabbling with a magical device.
I'm afraid you'll have to stay under lock and key, although I don't see why you should be stuck in that broom cupboard. Your attic room will do.
Pewter followed him, as Seth reluctantly agreed and dragged his way to the top floor.
Do you really think Miss Troutbean will be able to communicate with Dr. Thelonious's dead spirit?
Seth whispered as Pewter gave a comforting farewell rap on the door after locking him in. He heard Pewter give a heartfelt sigh.
The longer you are around magic, Seth, the more you learn to keep an open mind. Plus, be useful, wouldn't it?
Give Dr. Tholomyès a chance to tell us everything. But until we prove otherwise, my advice, sadly, is trust no one. Oh, except me, of course.
So, is Miss Troutbeam's ability to communicate with ghosts magic? Or do you mean you think she's up to something?
Don't you get the impression, Seth, said Pewter wearily, that everyone here is up to something.
Chapter 41. The picture becomes clearer. Seth slumped onto the bed, thinking furiously. He was slowly aware of a gleam, an eerie glow coming from a corner of the room. It was his mirror, the mirror that didn't always work, only now it was gleaming. It was the back that was shining brightly, not the glass. He turned it over and could make out bright letters. He could read the words perfectly clear, Witchracht. He dropped the mirror. As he stared wide-eyed at the glowing inscription, a slithering voice came out of the walls of his room, this time in a whisper, as if it was talking only to him, Witchracht. Apprehensively, Seth picked up the mirror and stared at it. It was just his broken mirror, which sometimes showed his reflection, but most of the time showed a reflection of what was in quite another room. If it was connected to Witchracht, then he had to face facts. It was quite likely some sort of artifact bewitched with sinister magic. As he peered deep into the mirror, he could only watch, transfixed with amazement, as one corner started showing a bright light which spread across the glass like a crack. The crack widened. Seth stared at it closely, closer than he ever had done before, and all of a sudden he was seeing a group of people. They were sitting around a big table in a panelled room lit by candlelight. Seth gripped the mirror tightly and knew exactly what he was seeing in his strange mirror. He was seeing straight into the hotel dining room where the séance was taking place. And as he peered further and further into the glass, deeper and deeper, looking at the faces, seeing Gloria Troutbeam's mouth moving, but hearing no words, Seth began to have a sensation of falling. Before he knew it, it was as if every molecule in his body was being exploded apart at the same time as he was being crushed down into a tiny, tiny tube. He was being sucked into the glass. It was like being shrunk and stretched at the same time. He reached out, trying to stop himself. Seth had his eyes closed. There was a rushing sound in his ears. When he opened them again, he was no longer falling. He was quite still, and he seemed to have landed upright. He blinked a few times. He looked about him, not at all sure where he was. His own hand appeared shadowy and grey, and he felt as flat as a piece of cardboard. And he was looking straight into the dining room. But from where? He could see the guests seated around the large, polished table in the centre of the room. This is what Miss Troutbeam had gathered them together for. This must be the séance. Gloria must be trying to summon the spirit of Dr. Tholomyès. The room was lit only by candles, just as Seth had seen when he'd looked into the glass in his room. Professor Pappersbook was sitting next to Gloria, who was directly opposite Seth. On her left was Count Marid, and then Master Dunster Dunstable. Norrie Bunn and Omri were seated just around from the professor, and just below, where Seth could see, Pewter, Kingfisher, and Mr. Bunn. Not Angelique or Tiffany. They were all sitting in a circle, all holding hands. But where exactly was Seth? If Pewter and Kingfisher were below him, that meant Seth was high up. But if he had been summoned to a séance, did that mean that he was dead?
because really being sucked into a glass and having all your molecules crushed like that could be enough to kill you. But he could still move. Gloria Troutbean, who had been looking down at the table, now opened her eyes and lifted her head. She was looking right at Seth. He made sure he didn't move, not even blink. Could she see him? Or was he now simply a spirit with no body? Seth waited for that whooshing sensation of falling. That would mean he was on the move again. But when it didn't come, he tried to look to the left and the right of him. He could see a figure to one side of him. He seemed to be between two men sharing a bottle of wine and some slices of cheese and bread. Both men, even that bread, looked familiar.
"He's here. I feel him. The presence is coming," said Gloria.
Then Seth worked out where he must be. He was in the painting, on the dining room wall, right above where he had placed the apricot dessert on the small table. He was actually standing in the painting, as if he was part of it. Gloria's eyes were now looking directly at Seth. He didn't want to be seen, especially doing something else that had the aura of sinister magic about it. How would he ever get back to his body? What would happen if he was trapped forever in the painting? Seth wished he'd known how to make himself move. Gloria's eyes narrowed, then opened wide with excitement. She dropped the hands of the two people sitting on either side of her, and slowly got to her feet. She was moving curiously towards the painting that contained Seth, and he tried to stay deathly still as her moon face creased into a curious frown. She stared up at him, her eyes eventually locking with his, her face a mixture of curiosity and wonder.
"I can do this. I can really do this," she said excitedly.
She extended her arms towards Seth and pointed a finger.
"There is a grey figure that's appeared in the painting. Look, everyone, at what I've done. I have summoned a spirit. I have done it."
Chapter 42 In the Land of the Living.
"I have summoned a spirit of the dead," cried Gloria,
her eyes wide. Now everyone was turning. Those beneath Seth, swiveling and craning their necks awkwardly. Seth kept as still as possible, not even daring to breathe. Everyone was scrambling to their feet, chairs scraping as they rose, their faces a mixture of interest and fear. They all moved towards the picture, and were all staring directly at him.
"A spirit!"
cried Dunster Dunstable.
"She's done it!"
cried the professor, clasping her hands to her mouth. Seth felt himself move, but this time he was moving forwards, not back, and there was no swirling, shrinking feeling. He felt like he was growing and taking shape and reforming, and there was nothing he could do to stop himself emerging from the painting. He carried on until he had no choice but to step over the frame, then fell in a heap on the floor. He looked up at a sea of accusing faces. Pewter said,
"Seth." He put out his hand to help him up. "Nice of you to join us. Got a little bored of being on your own? It's okay, everyone. He's still in the land of the living."
"Search him,"
cried Kingfisher. No one moved. Belatedly recalling he was in charge of security, Kingfisher went to grab at the dark mirror Seth was still gripping.
"What fiendish artifact of dark magic have you this time?"
"I think we might be getting to the bottom of another mystery," said Pewter.
He extended his hand, and Seth had no choice but to hand over his mirror, which Pewter examined closely. Then he leapt up and began to go over the painting, reminding Seth of how he'd watched Angelique using her long fingers to explore the frames and the backs of all the pictures.
"How did this boy step out of a picture?"
demanded Professor Papperspook, her pile of gaudy hair wobbling. They all turned to Pewter,
who was frowning at the painting. "I think," said Seth, dragging a hand through his hair, "I think it is possible it might be something called a runglass. But he couldn't think of anything else he could add. How could you come crawling out of a picture holding an artifact of sinister magic and say anything that wasn't going to make it look as if you were up to no good?
"Well, now," cried Pewter excitedly, examining Seth's mirror again even more closely, "I believe this gives us some answers. For instance, why you detected a presence in your room, Miss Troutbean?"
"You mean I didn't see the spirit of Dr. Philomius?"
asked Gloria forlornly.
"It looks to me much more like it was someone wandering about using the pictures as a secret passageway," explained Pewter. "An outdated magical invention. Definitely banned magic. Far too many cases of people getting trapped."
Seth was thinking furiously. When he'd read in the Teleglobe about the wanted sorcerer, Witchracht, having lived here at the Last Chance Hotel, and about his black book gleaming with the words Witchracht on the spine, he had started to put two and two together. Finally, he was close to seeing what was really going on. He was only a couple of steps away from understanding everything. Chapter 43. Lock Me Up Again. Norrie shoved her way forward, nearly sending Gloria Troutbean flying and sticking her pointy face right into Seth's.
"What have you done with Tiffany? She's not in her room. We must find her. My poor baby."
She looked accusingly at Seth, who could only stammer denials.
"We mustn't waste any time," growled Henri. "We must find her."
"We must," wailed Norrie. "Something terrible must have happened. What if she's headed into the forest, with absolutely no hope?" said Dunster Dunstable, shrinking back. "It's almost dark. We'd be better waiting for morning."
"We can't wait. Perhaps she's hurt," wailed Norrie,
"lying injured somewhere and unable to get back. Just lying there, scared, hoping for rescue as it grows dark around her. What if she's been murdered?"
"We must leave no stone unturned," said Mr. Bunn.
"I will assist," volunteered Professor Pappersbook, "and so will Gloria."
"Count me in," said Count Marid.
"Do not worry, madam. I doubt she'll be far, but may I suggest we search outside first? It will soon be getting dark."
"Let's go!" yelled Mr. Bunn.
"Thank you, Count, Professor, Master Dunster Dunstable and Miss Troutbean."
Norrie wrung her hands.
"Mr. Kingfisher, can we also rely on you?"
Before he even had a chance to protest, Kingfisher got caught up in the crush, dragged out by Norrie, gripping his arm and steering him to the door. Master Dunster Dunstable, on his very short legs, followed last behind everyone else. Pewter announced that he would stay and keep an eye on Seth. But Seth doubted anyone would have heard. Pewter turned to Seth, who expected to be questioned immediately about the runglass.
"Well, they seem very purposeful. What do you say to some tea?"
Seth could think of nothing better than a cup of tea right now, and nodded gratefully, although he doubted he would ever get used to the way Pewter always asked such unexpected questions. Pewter turned to leave, and Seth followed through the deserted lobby. But as Pewter carried on into the kitchen, Seth was distracted by a strange light moving behind the tapestry picture of the girl in the yellow dress. Someone else hadn't joined in the search for Tiffany. Someone was in Mr. Bunn's study. Was that strange light coming from the only other person who hadn't been at the table? Angelique? Or was it Tiffany herself? Stealthily, leaving Pewter to make the tea, Seth headed for the welcome desk. He had to bend to squeeze through the gap. He had never set foot in Mr. Bunn's study before, and he looked curiously around as he stepped right inside the small room full of shelves, some of books, but he saw mostly rows of animal skulls bleached white, with empty eye sockets, tiny white skulls of the mice and voles that were plentiful in the woods, and a giant one with huge rolled horns. There was a comfortable chair, with worn arms and a leather seat. On a small, polished table, there was a pile of ancient books. Was this where Mr. Bunn had practiced getting those figures to move? The whole room was filled with the smell of scorching, as though someone had started a small fire, and a figure was standing there sending snapping jets of blue light into the shelves. Angelique Square. She spun around, but recovered quickly. Seth! He had no plan of what to say to her, except to let her know that her game was up, and to get the final pieces to fit together. One thing he was sure of. She had been lying to him from the start. She didn't even work for Thelomius. And now he wanted the truth. The real truth this time. He opened his mouth, but the words he was about to say came out of hers.
"Time for you to tell me everything," said Angelique.
"Me?" he said aghast. "It's you who has to stop pretending. I know you've been lying."
"What on earth have you been hiding in here, Seth?" she said, as if he hadn't even spoken.
She lifted her red cane, and Seth began to edge back nervously, his eyes fixed on the end, as she moved towards him, her face set with that familiar, fierce determination.
"Get talking, Seth. Something of immense magical power has been kept here."
The cane had started ticking. Seth carried on edging away, not taking his eyes off Angelique, as she stopped and flipped the top of her red cane. She raised the cane upwards, and the ticking went frantic. Her dark eyes narrowed.
"Tell me about it."
She sent a shower of cornflower blue sparks into the walls. This time, the rumbling was fierce, and he could hear clearly as the words, "Witchracht," grumbled threateningly out of the walls. Seth waited for plaster to start falling. She lifted her cane up towards the ceiling and inched towards Seth, who could only close his eyes as the end glowed brighter. He stumbled backwards, feeling behind him for something he might snatch up and use as a weapon if he needed to, but his scrabbling fingers found only small animal skulls and books. He braced himself, waiting for the jet of blue to spark right into him. Chapter 44. The Truth, Pure and Simple. Seth waited until the last moment, until he sensed Angelique was really close to him. Then he opened his eyes and went to grab the cane from her. There was a movement behind him. Angelique spun to look, snatching her cane out of Seth's reach.
"Inspector Pewter!" she greeted thinly, about a second before Pewter's silvery head appeared.
"Wondered where you had got to?"
"Just a step behind you, where I have been from the start, I fear."
The tapestry moved aside, and Seth wondered if tree-like Pewter could squeeze in through the opening. Seth spoke quickly.
"That Rungglass, the simple truth is, I had no idea what it did. I've never used it before. It's Angelique who's got explaining to do. Do you believe me?"
Pewter emerged to stand up in the room, although his head skimmed the ceiling.
"In my experience, the truth is rarely pure and never simple, Seth, and that is exactly one of the reasons I would very much like a little chat with Miss Square."
Angelique held her cane up threateningly, which Pewter ignored.
"It might even be what some people might call long overdue. The truth, I meant."
Angelique was standing beside the table in the center of the room, and she casually flipped open one of the books, Demons and Witches in History. Seth could see the other titles: A Concise Tome of Essential Magic Craft, Demonology, Numerology, and the Zodiac, Everyman Book of Magical Skills for All, Amaze Your Friends, Easy Spells for every occasion, and he had thought Mr. Bunn skulked in here reading the newspaper. "You expect the truth?" she said.
"Well, why not? I find it can be quite enormously helpful."
"Seth thinks I killed Dr. Philomius. You both think I killed him." Her eyes flashed a bold look at them both.
"You did actually tell me yourself you were responsible for his death," pointed out Seth.
She frowned. Her eyes darkened. Then she spluttered,
"I told you I felt his death was down to me, not that I actually killed him. I can't believe you both think..."
"Did you kill him?"
asked Seth, bluntly.
Angelique gasped. "Of course not. I came here looking for something else, but I'm sorry. There are things I am not able to tell you."
"We know you're not really Dr. Philomius's assistant," said Seth.
"I suppose you tricked your way here, Angelique."
"I suppose I did, sort of."
"Or was it his idea for you both to come here?"
put in Pewter, picking up easy spells for every occasion from the table.
"Dr. Philomius knew I'd be interested in this place. When there was a request from someone here applying for the prospect, it was a brilliant opportunity not to be missed. It was he who really leapt at the suggestion we travel and hold it here. But he never confided in me why he wanted to come."
She moved the cane right up to the ceiling, and this time the ticking accelerated until it sounded like it was going to explode.
"Wish I'd asked a lot more questions when I had the chance, because there was something more dangerous waiting for him here than he expected."
"Then he knew Witcheract was an MFE under investigation," said Pewter softly. "And the Last Chance Hotel was the last known possible sighting."
Seth couldn't help but stare. How long had Pewter known that a missing scientific sorcerer had once lived here? And, Seth suspected, filled the place with magic, quite a lot of it sinister magic.
"I've been blaming myself for the fact that he got dragged out here where he was vulnerable. I had no idea he was in such danger," said Angelique sorrowfully. "The least I can do is try to find out what he came here for and try to finish whatever he was determined to do."
"As to that," said Pewter, "I suspect he had a good reason of his own to see if Witcheract was alive or dead. I suspect what really interested him was seeing what sinister magical devices might have been left behind."
"You came here on the trail of Witcheract," said Seth to Angelique. "You didn't come here to kill Dr. Philomius?"
"Yes, thanks for pointing that out, Seth."
Cogs finally clicked into place.
"You're here to secretly check if the sorcerer, Witcheract, is alive or dead," said Seth. "I know what that means. I know what you are, Angelique, and why you can't talk about it. That makes you one of these undercover magical secret agents."
Chapter 45. We Should Hurry. Angelique barely flinched.
"Okay, Seth. Seems like my cover is blown. But just call me a cleaner. I don't really like magical secret agent. But now, please, will you answer some of my questions?"
But Seth hadn't finished yet.
"You came here to investigate and clear the place of any sinister magic lurking here. That's what you call cleaning?"
Angelique nodded.
"And remove any magical texts or artifacts we wouldn't want to fall into the wrong hands?"
"My black book," muttered Seth.
"Exactly. I would really like to know all about that black book," said Angelique. "You mentioned something to me, Seth, and I wonder if that was really where you got that information from."
Seth hesitated, but recognized that there was little point keeping secrets anymore.
"There was a picture in the black book of a firefly cage. I noticed it because it looked like the tiny bird cage I know Mr. Bunn kept in here." He pointed to an empty hook on the ceiling.
Angelique stared just for a moment, then leapt onto the polished round table. She sent another explosion of blue sparks into the ceiling, taking a reading with the end of her cane. Seth heard Pewter snap shut the book he had been holding. Gloria accused Dr. Thelonious of inventing the firefly cage and never knowing what happened to it, said Seth, bewildered, staring up at the empty hook.
You mean... You can't mean that Mr. Bunn's tiny bird cage was this firefly cage Dr. Thelonious invented? A fearful device of awful sinister magic? Here?
Then that was Dr. Thelonious's secret mission in coming here, cried Pewter. He must have guessed there was a chance his firefly cage had fallen into the hands of a scientific sorcerer like Witchracht. He must have been trying to track it down for years. That key he hid unlocks it.
Angelique leapt off the table.
You found the key to the firefly cage?
Seth and Pewter nodded.
Well, we found a key, said Seth.
I didn't have a clue what it was, but Inspector Pewter was convinced it was important, and that Dr. Thelonious must have brought it here for a reason. I guess he was trying to recover that firefly cage and lock it up and stop anyone from using it.
Your Mr. Bunn must have been getting his magic from somewhere.
She frowned deeply into the end of her cane.
What's confused me from the start is that all the traces of magic should have been stale. I simply could not work out why all the readings are of distorted magic.
Seth remembered how Angelique had explained to him how a firefly cage meant someone else could use a sorcerer's magic. Finally, he understood. That was how Mr. Bunn had done magic. That was how he had made Henri's carved figures come to life. He'd been using the magic in the firefly cage. Angelique tucked her red cane under her arm.
There is no way Mr. Bunn could have known what kind of magic he was dealing with.
She looked around her.
If Dr. Thelonious's firefly cage ended up in Witchracht's hands, that would explain why there is so much magic around here, how magic has leaked even into the walls. But that leaves us with one big question.
She pointed to the empty hook on the ceiling.
Where is the firefly cage now?
She went and lifted the tapestry.
And where is everyone?
Tiffany's missing. They all went looking, said Seth.
Everyone is heading out for something called the Glowworm Glade, said Pewter, clambering through the tapestry after her. Sounds rather delightful. I suggest we join them.
Let's hurry.
Angelique headed for the lounge door at a run.
It's an intensely powerful tool of sinister magic, and one of them must have got hold of it. None of them have the faintest clue what they are dealing with.
Angelique lifted her cane to block Seth's way.
Not you.
She lifted her dark eyes and looked deeply into his.
Stay here. It's way too dangerous.
She swung herself out into the darkness. Seth would have protested, but his mind was already on another plan, something he really needed to do. Angelique turned back briefly.
Did you really think I killed him?
Her voice was heavy with sadness. Then she started to sprint towards the forest without waiting for a reply, and he heard her voice call in the darkness.
Let's just hope nobody else dies!
Chapter 46
Who?
Seth knew exactly where he was going and what he must do. He felt as if his brain must be making that same ticking noise as came from Angelique's red cane. Just for now, he would leave Angelique and Pewter to worry about the firefly cage. He was focused on another magical device completely. Something else that had been set up here by Witchracht. He was convinced someone had arrived at the Last Chance Hotel, already knowing all about exactly the sort of sinister magic lurking here. Someone had arrived with a plan.
A plan of how to get to that firefly cage before Dr. Tholomyès. Get Dr. Tholomyès out of the picture permanently, and how to get away with it all very easily. As Seth raced up the stairs, he realized what a lucky escape he'd had, how close he had come to taking the blame. It had seemed impossible that anyone else but him could possibly have done it. But now he understood everything. And if he was right, he finally also knew who had done it. And this was his big chance to prove it. Seth flung open the door to room 6. He crossed straight to the desk, searching for the object that would confirm all his suspicions, to prove the truth, and finally clear his own name. He knew what he had seen, and it had been right here. Now all he had to do was find it, and finally prove his innocence beyond any doubt, and he would be free.
"What are you thinking, Seth?"
Seth swung around and saw Nightshade had padded in silently after him.
"The picture in the hotel is set up like a secret passage. You get into it via a magical device called a runglass. It explains the mystery of how Gloria Troutbean saw a grey shape moving in her bedroom she thought was the spectre of Dr. Tholomyès."
Nightshade's whiskers quivered.
"But more than that, it's the answer I've been searching for from the beginning. The answer to that question I've asked myself dozens of times without having a clue of how to answer it. Of how someone got into the dining room to put the poison into Dr. Tholomyès's dessert. The runglass must be how the murderer did it, but it's not here."
He hit the desk in frustration.
"It was Kingfisher?" said Nightshade.
"Had to be, but I have to prove it."
Seth frantically went through the objects on the desk, but the mirror definitely wasn't there.
"When I first saw it, I thought it was my mirror. I picked it up, but it must have been a runglass. But it's not here. How am I going to prove what he did?"
he said in a panic. Nightshade leapt up onto the desk.
"He came prepared, didn't he? Was well informed about this place," she hissed. "He must have known before he arrived how he'd get the run of the hotel, passing any locked or charmed doors."
"I had the answer all the time. I should have worked out it was a magical device, because it would sometimes show a view of a different room."
"You couldn't have known, Seth. And you did work it out."
"But how do I prove it? Without the mirror, I haven't a chance."
"Don't worry, Seth. I think I might have the proof you need."
She moved across the room in one slinky movement, and pointed at something pinned to the back of the door. A card, like a playing card, attached with a golden pin shaped like a dagger. On the card was a picture of a red flower. Seth slowly unpinned it and stared at the card.
"I know exactly what sort of flower this is. Red valerian."
"Kingfisher is red valerian?"
Seth considered bumbling Kingfisher, and could not quite picture him as being a master criminal.
"My guess is Kingfisher was acting under orders," said Seth, pocketing the card. "I can see this was all Red Valerian's plan to get rid of Dr. Tholomyès, and get hold of a powerful magical device at the same time. And so far, Nightshade, he's getting away with it."
Something strange drew Seth to the windows.
"Kingfisher took charge of sealing all the exits," said Nightshade.
"Think he might have been smart enough to leave himself a way clear for him to escape. He might have gone already."
Seth's stomach plummeted.
"But it can't be too late. What on earth is that?"
Out of the window, and towards the glow-worm glade, Seth watched a vast, vivid, almost luminous green glow.
"What the heck is that?" said Nightshade.
"I don't know. We should find out," said Seth, a sick feeling growing.
"But it can't be good."
Chapter 47 An Unexpected Army. They plunged out in the direction of the forest, where the green glow was coming from. Tonight it felt as if the dark forest had crept even closer.